This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC 254 in the main event, Khabib Nurmagomedov taking on Justin Gaethje for the UFC lightweight championship. With you as always, I'm your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. And also with me, as always, the co-host, the analyst, the important guys, it is Chris Olsen. You can find him on Twitter, at RealChrisOlsen. And Joe, also better known as Sun Tzu. Guys, how you doing? Ready for 254?
Be better and it would be a sin, man.
No, I am 100% ready. Not so many big fights outside of the main event, but a lot of fun ones. A lot of ones that could go either way, could be squashes one way or the other. So really have to get your mark right on that, or go in a couple of and a bunch of lineups. But this could be variance heavy, and I'm all for it. So let's get started.
I'm looking forward to this card. A couple of spots where there's some big favorites that I never thought I would have to pick as big favorites, and I kind of do. And we'll get to those fights. We'll talk about those as we get there. Before we get started, make sure you go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all of RotoWire's premium content. No credit card required. They have everything covered for daily fantasy, season-long, football, baseball's ending, MMA, obviously, soccer, all that stuff. Have it covered there. So make sure and check it out. Subscribe on YouTube. It is the RotoWire channel on YouTube. And subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, RotoWire MMA. Already shit talking in comments. Appreciate it, those of you who are here. Keep the comments flowing. I'll try and reference them as we move along. And that being said, let's jump into these fights. First up, one of these fights I was immediately talking about, Joel Alvarez at 9,000, taking on Alexander Yakovlev at 7,200. God, man. Alvarez, though, we have odds value here on Yakovlev. Alvarez is 9,000 minus 165. Yakovlev is plus 155. I think there's probably a more popular line odds value spot on this card. The fight does not go to decision, is minus 170. So, Vegas looking for a finish here. I'll let you guys take the breakdown. Who are we going to start with? Chris, we'll start with you this week.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure who Vegas is looking for a finish from. I guess it would be Alvarez, but if you look at his finishes, he's got 15 subs out of 70, and they're all guard subs. They're all like guillotines and triangle chokes. And I mean, I don't know.
Alvarez plus 130 inside the distance.
All right. I don't know if Yakovlev is going to take him down. I mean, maybe he is, although he doesn't do that very often. That's kind of my problem, is that Yakovlev doesn't do much of anything very often. He's not a prolific takedown artist or striker. He just sort of, wades through his fights. And I guess, he's big for the weight class. Both these guys are. Alvarez is a little bit more filled out than Yakovlev, who generally looks like a toothpick. Or Q-tip is actually what I meant to say, is a better representation of it. But I actually like Alvarez a fair bit here. I think that he bounces around pretty well for a bigger guy. He's like 6'4", I think. Moves pretty well in there. He's got really hard body kicks, and this is going to be an opposite stance fight, so those are going to be ready. I think if Yakovlev does try to take him down, he's going to have to deal with that guard game that I mentioned earlier. Alvarez does hang his chin up in striking exchanges. There's no question about it. But I just don't see Yakovlev as that like counterpuncher who's going to come alive and hit the big shot. So I think Alvarez is just sort of going to outwork him here. I guess one of these guys could find the finish, although I'm not 100% sure how likely that is, but I'm taking Alvarez.
Yeah, I can't back a guy whose main path to victory is a submission off his back. I'm going to actually go against my own James Tahuna narrative here and look at the fact that Yakovlev has fought both Damian Maia and Usman has that in his back pocket. You know, can pretty much take down anybody, and Alvarez has got zero takedown defense. I mean, literally zero takedown defense. It's not I'm not being grandiose here, and his takedown defense is zero. So give me Yakovlev here, 7.2K on DraftKings. Pretty decent spot for him. I think he's got a fairly solid floor. Don't get me wrong, I'm not in love with his game, as Chris had mentioned. He doesn't do a whole hell of a lot. He's not high output. But if he decides to actually go for takedowns, he could get five takedowns in this fight. That's 25 points. So I think he's got a fairly solid floor. He's a good cash play. I'll take Yakovlev.
Yeah, the cash play is definitely there just because of the odds value. Alvarez could find a submission. I'm backing Alvarez because Yakovlev has not looked very good, but that's in terms of the straight up. TJ says Yakovlev at this point, the point of his career, where he's a better rapper than a fighter. That's not a terrible comment. It's pretty much right on. Yakovlev is
going up on the board. Look, there it is.
Alvarez, you know, younger guy. I'm assuming he makes improvement. So while I'm picking Alvarez, though, I'm going to have plenty of Yakovlev. Next fight up, and then I have to go get a tissue, guys. So I'm going to be muted for a second. Oh, good. But we just start with Joe talking about Miranda Maverick. Miranda Maverick, 9,300, taking on Liana Jojua at 6,900. Maverick minus 355, Jojua plus 320. Fight does not go to decision, minus 155. I was telling everybody who would listen before Jojua's last fight that Belbita could do something stupid here and she could get a win, and that's exactly what happened. In this case, I don't think Maverick is going to be that stupid. I think this is going to be a beating, but let's go to the MMA Whisper. Joe, what do you got?
Yeah, so I've been scouting Miranda Maverick, you know, going back to Invicta. I think she's got great athletic prowess. She's not a perfect fighter. She has made a camp switch, you know, a bigger camp, not one of the name camps, but still a bigger camp. So I like that. It looks like she's working to round out and improve her game. She is super strong. If you combine her pro and amateur record, she's got 11 submission wins. I do not think a fighter whose sole path to victory is an armbar from guard is going to really cause any problems for Miranda Maverick. Also, Miranda Maverick is a positional grappler. She doesn't always look for the sub. So I definitely see her in a really good smash spot here. You know, pretty safe for cash. It is women's MMA. She is 23 years old. She is making her UFC debut on Fight Island in Abu Dhabi. You know, those are all things to consider. She looked pretty good and relaxed at weigh-ins. Like I said, she is super strong. You know, that's the only reason why I might not endorse her as a GPP play, because she's really priced up high. And, you know, if she doesn't get the finish, is she going to earn her salary? But I do like her in cash. So give me Miranda Maverick.
Chris.
Ooh, just in time. Actually, before I give my pick, the czar here gave us a good piece of information, which I had forgotten about. It's that, Alvarez coming in 3 pounds over. And I would ask you, Joe, since you are going to mention this earlier in reference to a later fight, does him coming in 3 pounds over give you any influence on Yakovlev getting those takedowns?
Not really. I mean, you know, again, I think he probably just at some point said, you know, I'm gonna stop and I'm not gonna try to deplete myself. And I think both these guys will be, you know, it's funny because Alvarez is cut. Right? Like he is a really ripped type of fighter. That's the kind of physique he has. Where Yakovlev is really just wiry, right? He's that wiry kind of fighter. So I don't really put too much into it. I mean, if he missed weight by a half a pound or a quarter of a pound, I would put more stock in it. But I think I don't, I'm not really putting too much into the miss.
Fair enough. As far as Maverick goes for me, I agree that I think she will win. I think she's the more physical grappler here as far as actually going for takedowns, and she's better in top position. She's good at floating around and trying to find the back. I would I would caution a little bit just because when we know two fighters are going to be, you know, flopping around on the ground, one of them could catch the other. It wouldn't be, you know, a huge surprise even if one is the better grappler. So I would say don't completely disregard Jojua in that sense. But I agree that I think this is a good spot for Maverick. I think that she's the better grappler here. As I said, the better top player. And yeah, I think she gets this done.
Somebody that was Maverick, the bigger girl during weigh-ins or during face-ups. I'm trying to look right now really quick.
I didn't see it myself.
I'm trying to look. No, Joshua is a little bigger. Looks like from what I just found.
I mean that doesn't.
No, it's not enough. And
yeah.
Yep. Either way, I don't think it's going to be enough here. I think Maverick is just kind of too skilled here, and Joshua's path is again catching an armbar. All right, let's move on. Daun Jung, 9,400, taking on Sam Alvey at 6,800. Jung is a minus. Ooh, I'm on the wrong card here. -315 favorite. Comeback on Sam Alvey +285. Fight doesn't go to decision. -190. Sam Alvey fights if they get out of the first round or death to DraftKings. So Chris, how do you have this one?
Yeah, I don't think this gets out of the first round. I think that Daun Jung is going to finish him. I think the best parallel for this is Little Nog. When he started off this losing streak for Alvey by knocking him out, he was also the technical boxer there, obviously way past his prime, but still retained his power and a little bit of hand speed. And that was enough when he backed Sam Alvey up. And with Daun Jung, you have a way more athletic fighter who also carries power in his hands. Actually going to have, I think, a 3-inch reach advantage here. And Sam Alvey is just, I hate every fight for him at, light heavyweight. I just, these guys are too fast. Sam Alvey moves around like he needs oil in there. And he's just going to wait and look for his counter shots. And then when he opens up, I think Jung is going to stun him. He sits behind that jab really well. I just think this is a terrible matchup for Alvey. I agree that he slows the pace down, and so his fights have a danger of, you know, not scoring real well. And I guess he always has the power to catch someone, although it hasn't happened in a long time now. But to be fair, it almost happened to Ryan Spahn. But he's about the stiffest fighter I've ever seen. He is like a fighter who doesn't like fighting, and it shows. And so if you can get him in uncomfortable positions, you can really. But anyway, I don't think Jung is that guy. I think he's going to knock him out. So I still like Jung, even though the price is probably too high. But I think he gets it done. But I mean, fading a little bit off of that price can't be a terrible.
Joe, what do you have? Give
Alvey. Yes, I'm sure Alvey that
fighting for his career, by the way.
Yes, that's true. I'm sure that Alvey's wife appreciates that comment that you made about his stiffness.
I think he was talking about Spahn, but you know.
Yeah, I think. look, I think what you said, Chris. I don't have a whole lot to add. Although I would be reticent to play Jung in cash, because if this is like, you know, an Alvey fight where he just kind of locks him up, and you know, I could see Jung grinding him and not getting a finish and it being a really low scoring fight. So I kind of like it for GPPs in case he does get that knockdown, but I'm not at 9.4K. I don't know if I would like it in cash, but I'm certainly going to pick Jung to win. And then obviously you want to take a flyer on Alvey, knowing that he's fighting for his career, likely take a small flyer on him, you know, at his price point in GPPs.
Pretty much agree, although I more on the side of this is going to be a grinding type of slow-paced fight, and if Jung gets a finish, it'll be second or third, and then at that price, I have issues. There's other places I think I want to jam in lineups that I don't need a ton of Daun Jung. Play both sides in GPP, but it's for the inside the distance line, I'll probably be a little bit underweight to this fight. All right, moving on. Alex Oliveira, 8,500, taking on, name I had to get right, Shavkat Rakhmonov at 7,700. The line has flipped in this one, so big odds value here on Rakhmonov. He's going to be the cash game chalk at minus 120. Oliveira, the comeback is plus 110. Fight does not go to decision, minus 125. Really, it's can Oliveira stop the takedowns here of Rakhmonov, and how done is Oliveira? It looked decent last time out against Peter Sabata, but it's Peter Sabata. We know Oliveira hits crazy hard, so does the newcomer Rakhmonov have enough takedowns and cardio to go with it to get this one done? Who's up first for this?
I'm up.
Joe.
Okay, so I'm going to apologize if anybody followed me over here from Creating Alpha. I'm going to repeat what I said on Creating Alpha. Do not completely buy into the line value here. Watch some of this guy's fights, Rock. He does not have the best fight IQ. He had a couple of fights in M1. Prior to that, he was a can crusher. Yes, he's got a 12-0 record. I get it. Russian, you see M1, you think, oh my God. Oliveira has been fighting much better competition over the course of his career. Yes, he doesn't always have the best fight IQ either, and his gas tank is somewhat suspect, but his performance against Sabata was one of the better performances that he's had in quite some time. And Sabata was this big, sneaky line value favorite as well in his fight against Oliveira. And I will be the first to admit that I bought into it. And got buried by how poorly Sabata fought. Everybody was commenting on his takedown prowess and his black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and Oliveira just pieced him up. I know he came in overweight, Czar, which I actually think is good, because he didn't deplete himself the cut. I like Cowboy Oliveira here. I like him a fair amount, and I really do hope that the line value players get taken for a ride with Rock here, because if you watch some of his fights, he's got some suspect fight IQ. He really does. And he takes damage too and ends up having to come back. So I think this could be a pretty interesting and fun fight, but I'm going to go with Cowboy here. I think he's going to be a sneaky contrarian play because you are getting line value with Rock. I think he's going to be fairly low owned on DraftKings. So I would certainly consider playing some Oliveira, and I also kind of like him as a bet, and I want to see if that line gets even wider. I might even have to go and bet him if the line gets a little wider.
Chris?
Yeah, I don't know if Oliveira is going to be under-owned. I think people...
No, he will be.
He will be, big time.
You think so?
All the line value players, all the guys who come in from other sports.
Oh, no, I know, but... I think people would rightly see this as a fight where, you know, either guy could get it done. I mean, that's how I'm looking at this anyway.
Well,
that's how
you know, they're hardcore MMA guys. Yeah. You know, like you look at guys that are coming in that just build lineups off a line value. He's going to be 40% owned, easy. Wow. If not more.
I guess that means I should load up on some more Oliveira.
You should.
I do think that I'm going Rock slightly here. I do think this, as I said, is a spot where either guy can win. The reason why I think that I'm going Rock is because he's got the physicality and the pressuring style that Sabota didn't have. He's not going to let Oliveira just stay out at range and basically do whatever he wants. Now, that brings its own dangers, of course. It's not that Oliveira can't grapple. We've seen that, but... oftentimes we see him in bad spots against grapplers, against Carlos Condit, against Gunnar Nelson, it always seems as though he, even if he starts in the best position on the ground, he doesn't maintain it. And I agree with Joe that Rock is susceptible for taking damage. I think that, I saw him get knocked down in a fight that happened not too long ago, and he did come back. But I just think the physicality and pressure are going to lead to those takedowns. I think he's either going to get the finish from top, or Oliveira is going to get tired and he's going to finish him that way. But close fight, fun fight, have both, and I guess have more Oliveira if he's going to be as low owned as my two co-hosts firmly seem to believe. But my pick is Rahman.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Rahmanov as the pick, although the line is a little, I'm surprised it flipped so hard. I guess I agree with it because he's a slight favorite, and that's kind of how I see it. I do think the grappling will be too much here. I've never been a fan of Peter Sabata. I picked Oliveira in that fight when everybody else was on Sabata, because I think Sabata is not good. So I think everything that everyone was thinking for Sabata Oliveira, I'm thinking I'm going to see this time Rahmanov Oliveira. That being said, you know, Oliveira live for this fight, and you know, it's not a bold stand I'm going to be taking, but in cash games at that chalk, like I'm probably going to eat the chalk and move on and have some Oliveira hedge back is how I'm going to approach this one. Moving on. Really fun fight. Fight I'm definitely looking forward to. And the line is puzzling to me here. Casey Kenny, 8,700, taking on Nathaniel Wood at 7,500. Casey Kenny, minus 160. Nathaniel Wood, plus 150. Fight goes to decision minus 185, but there should be tons of volume here. I'm going to steal some of Joe's narrative thunder. I think it's just recency bias. We've seen Wood be touched up before, and we see Casey Kenny coming off, you know, a really good win. Casey Kenny fought 2 weeks ago on Fight Island, flew back home, and now is back. That's 40 hours of being in a plane in 2 weeks. That will fuck you up. Like, I'm worried about how hard he can press for three rounds. Now, he's a pro athlete. There's going to be a high pace in this one. That's some narrative that I already kind of liked Wood in this one, because Wood's got decent takedown defense. I think he's the better striker, technically. Kenny has some grappling upside, and it's weird. It comes down to, can Kenny keep up the pace, and can Nate Wood not get dropped? Because we've seen Nate Wood get touched up before. So I'm on the Wood side as a really live dog here, but a fun fight to target both sides of. Chris.
Yeah, I actually share your puzzlement. Even if you wanted to make Wood the underdog, I don't understand why he would be quite this heavy. But I'm going Wood pretty strongly here, because I think that his control of distance and his counterpunching are going to really come in handy here, especially when Kenny tries to crash the pocket with boxing. The body kicks that he's been lighting his opponents up with lately, I don't think they're going to work here. First, I don't think he's going to want to go kick for kick with someone like Nathaniel Wood, who I think is a really sharp Muay Thai striker. So that's one thing. The other thing, too, is, you know, if he takes Wood down, don't forget that Wood – Three or four of his victories actually come from subs, and I think he got the better of Johnny Eduardo when Eduardo initially had him in bottom position. So that'll be an interesting thing to look at too, how Wood fares on the ground. Will he look to scramble back to his feet? Will he look to work off his back? But I just think that Wood has more tools here than Kenny, and I think he uses them with greater ease. Like I said, I love the range here. I love the counter striking. I really think that could count. That could carry the day. And I'm going with Nathaniel Wood here.
You know, Joe, I was looking at this one, thinking, okay, maybe it's the public who is, you know, bet Kenny up. I wonder where this opened. Kenny opened at -225. That's, Jesus, I wish I got the Wood on Nathaniel, which means Wood opened up at +175. I wish I got that line. How do you have this fight?
Yeah, so I have a question for you guys. So I'm wondering, if San Alvey wasn't so stiff, would his wife like Wood? Yeah. I really wonder. Anyway, I like Wood, obviously. You know, I like – no, not obviously. But, sure. Yeah, I think this
no,
is
– No, obviously.
A, yeah, obviously, maybe. You know, like I'm – yeah. So let's go. Wood has been – actually, I can't say that with a straight face anymore. Let's look at Nathaniel's DraftKings performances. In his victories, 90 points against Eduardo, 108 points against Yule, 109 points against Quinones. He lost. He got flash KO'd by Dotson, only scored 28 points. and 101 points. That averages out to 86.9 points. I'm thinking that that's probably the third on the slate behind Khabib and Gaethje. Someone could kind of come call me on that. But that's pretty good at 7.5K. And Kenny, I love Kenny. I think he's a great fighter. But he beat the living crap out of a guy that just stood there and took it. You know, like, I'd like to think that, you know, Woody's got a bit more skill than that. You know, comes from a good camp in the UK, trains with, you know, Brad Pickett. I think he's live at 7.5K. I think he's got a chance to win outright. So I'll take Nathaniel Wood.
All right, moving on. Next fight up, Stefan Struve, 8,300, taking on Tai Tuivasa at 7,900. The line in this fight, Tuivasa is now the favorite, minus 120. Come back on Struve, plus 110. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 250. Tai Tuivasa is an aggressive striker. Stefan Struve is a tall toothpick. He'll have the advantage on the ground because Tai Tuivasa can't stop a takedown. It really is Tuivasa's pressure going to land in a knockout, or is he going to end up on the ground and is Struve going to beat the shit out of him or submit him? It's really the only way this fight goes, unless someone got something, a crazy different opinion. I lean towards Tuivasa, but it's not a strong lean. Joe, how do you have it?
Yeah, we got a fighter who essentially retired in Struve, and we got a fighter who is coming off of a string of losses in Tuivasa. There is some narrative around Tuivasa. I like that he did this camp at AKA. You know, is one camp enough? Maybe. It's certainly you know, a good camp switch for Tuivasa. You have to think that he's fighting for his career to avoid a pink slip here. I mean, you know, a lot of other guys might have been cut already, but he brings a certain joie de vie to the UFC, and they kind of like him, so they're giving him another fight. However, Struve has got a really clear path to victory here. Just drop Tuivasa to the mat. You know, Struve is a long fighter that's never learned how to fight long, and that's been why he hasn't been successful in the UFC. I mean, he has a reach and height advantage over everybody, and he just doesn't know how to use them. And I don't know why he never learned. I don't know why he didn't go to a camp to teach him those skills. This is a pure GPP fight. I mean, again, apologies to those who followed me over from Alpha, but my take on this fight is that you duplicate your Struve lineups with your Tuivasa lineups, play them in GPPs, and just forget about it. Like, don't even worry about who's going to win. I think Tuivasa is going to be higher owned because you're getting some line value in Tuivasa. I guess I'm going to lean towards Struve just because I think Struve can actually take him down. But I really do think that this is a fight that you should probably be split pretty evenly down the middle. So I'll take Struve with a lean.
Sounds good.
Oh, am I up?
All right. You're up.
You're up.
All right, here we go. I agree that you should basically duplicate. This is a tough fight to call. I'm leaning Struve as well because I just said, Joe, he didn't know how to fight long, or he hasn't, but he's actually looked better recently. That loss against Ben Rothwell was not a loss. You can't lose by getting kicked in the junk. It just doesn't work that way. Ben Rothwell should have been disqualified. Struve was winning that entire fight until that happened. That was a severe miscarriage of fight justice. But otherwise, I'll say that, look, Struve, we've actually seen him try to toy around with a jab. He showed it in the fight against Marcin Tybura, even though he lost because Tybura wrestled him. He showed a lot of good kicks, hiding the high kicks behind the low kicks in the fight against Rothwell there. I really think he actually might be getting better. Maybe it's because he's getting more comfortable. I don't know. We know that he's a guy who struggles with anxiety in there. Maybe the retirement took a little load off. I'm not even supposed to be here. Obviously, that's major speculation on my part. But either way, I think he actually looks a little more comfortable as a striker. And look, I mean, we can say this to varying degrees on anybody's Struve fights, but here it's going to be pretty severe where Tuivasa is going to need to negotiate, I think, 9 inches of height and reach. And I just don't know that he does it. I know that what he's going to try to do is just crash forward and land shots. But, I mean, if he crashes forward and ends up in a tie clinch, that's not good for him either. I just think that the window is pretty narrow here. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think that Struve really has a lot of ways to win this fight. I mean, we don't see him use takedowns very often, but he has before. He did against Daniel Malanchik, which I believe – I wanted to say it's his last submission victory, but was Marcos Rogério de Lima a sub or did he elbow him to death? He might have elbowed him to death.
I don't remember.
But either way. But, yeah, I think that it's always going to be touch and go with a fighter like Struve. But, again, some of that might just be perception. I mean, I really think he has looked better. I still think that this is a fight where you have to take both, but I'm taking Struve.
And we'll see if the AKA training camp has helped Tuivasa with a takedown defense at all. We're going to find out.
That's interesting. Apparently, Struve said of Tuivasa, I'm taking – I mean, you can't always agree or believe what the fighters say in the fighter meeting. Sometimes
– that's what he should do. But how many times have we seen a fighter not do what they should do?
Right. Or maddening. What they say they're going to do.
So we'll see. I mean, that is his best path. Strong GPP fight. I think you can play both sides. Magomed Ankalaev, 8,900, taking an Ion Kutalab at 7,300. The rematch. The sixth time this has been booked. I thought I was doing hyperbole, but it really could be the sixth time this has been booked. Line in this fight, Ankalaev -305, Kutalab +275. Fight doesn't go to decision, -275. My take on this one, I picked Kutalab the first time around, by the way. And my take on it is that that was his best chance to beat him. That strategy he used, not going to work this time. I was actually surprised at how clean it, like how technical Ankalaev striking was. I didn't think he had that. And I think he'll either do that again, or at some point, I think he's going to get Kutalaba down and just beat the stuffing out of him. Whether he uses, I don't think he's going to mess around on the feet. It's either going to be Kutalaba crashing forward, okay, quick double. Or if Kutalaba changes strategies, he's going to be kind of at range, and you know, and Ankalaev can line up his double. That's not the way Kutalaba fights. My point is, however this fight goes, I see Ankalaev getting on top and doing a lot of damage here. So I'm on Ankalaev. Chris, who do you have?
Yeah, I'm on Ankalaev, and quite frankly, I don't know how you could go any other way. I mean, unless you just want to take the Hail Mary from Kutalaba. I really like Ankalaev. I mean, I think he's always been a really technical striker. His striking defense is crazy. It's something like 60%. He just doesn't have a lot of holes in his game. And aside from, you know, we always have to bring up the 1 second tap. He could be staring at a perfect UFC record there. He can do a number of things. Like you think he's just a skilled boxer, and then he front kicks Dacha Longbulia to death. So. I mean, I really think he's got a lot in his arsenal. The takedown threat, which of course is there. He's just got too many ways to beat Kutalaba here. And Kutalaba is a big puncher. He's got the Greco-Roman wrestling himself, but his takedown defense is super solid. I don't see Kutalaba getting him down. So yeah, the prototypical puncher's chance for Kutalaba, but as far as the pick goes, I don't see how he can go anywhere but Ankalaev here.
Joe.
Yeah, look, I like Kutalaba. I mean, you know, he's a guy that, you know, has fought for Moldovan vodka in his own country. I mean, he's a tough guy. You know, give him some credit. He's entertaining. I just think he's outgunned here in pretty much everywhere, you know, standing on the ground. By the way, this is the lowest price on DraftKings that we've ever seen Ankalaev at. So I like him a fair amount. Give me Ankalaev, give me him by finish. Ankalaev is a pretty solid play in cash, solid in GPPs. Kutalaba has got a puncher's chance, of course. So, you know, if you're playing mass entry and a lot of lineups, you should, you know, probably throw him in a few in case he lands that Hail Mary, type of punch. But I don't see him as having like the submission skills to catch, you know, Ankalaev in another mistake. So his only path to victory, as I see it, is by knockout. So if you want to throw a few percentage points on him for that, fine. But give me Ankalaev.
All right, moving on. Next fight up, Lauren Murphy, 8,800, taking on
Lilia Shakarova at 7,400. Murphy minus 195. Shakarova plus 180. Fight goes to decision minus 360. I'm glad we're on Joe again, because Joe, I can't pay 8,800 for Lauren Murphy. I can't do it. I'm going to play Shakarova in GPPs because I think anybody's live against Lauren Murphy.
Okay, so I can pay that. Now, it's not without some risk, so you've got to kind of follow my train of thought here. Lauren Murphy has only done 10x once in her career on her salary. This is pretty much the highest price we've ever seen her at on DraftKings, although for some reason, you know, if you go into the DraftKings lineup maker, you're not seeing her salary. They're all zeroed out. Maybe that's because she's only gotten 10x one time. Lately, I think she's looked decent. She's taken down Modafferi and Andrea Lee, who both are pretty good wrestlers. You know, she was going to fight Cynthia Calvillo, who is a real good ground fighter. I think this could be a smash spot for her. She's going to be very low owned. People are going to look at her 57.6 point DraftKings average per fight and say, I don't like her at that price point. You know, I like maybe Volkov underneath her. I obviously like Ankalaev above her. So she's going to be pretty low owned. But I really do think that this could be a smash spot for her. So I'm going to pick Lauren Murphy. I don't have a lot of love for her opponent. I'll probably have like the same ownership percentage I put on Kudalaba on her opponent. But I do think that this could be a pretty good spot for lucky Lauren Murphy, and she looked pretty good at weigh-ins. You know, she has been more ripped recently, is taking her training seriously. She saw this fight with Calvillo as a sort of maybe title eliminator type of fight. So I really like her. I think she's going to put on a good performance, but, you know, I do understand the risk. I do understand that, you know, you are banking on a fighter that has, you know, only done 10x once in her career and is priced pretty high up. But I think those are all reasons why she could make an interesting contrarian play. So I'll take lucky Lauren Murphy.
Chris, you with Joe on Murphy or me on just betting against Murphy for the price? And worst case, 7,400 is going to kill my day anyway.
Well, I don't think I'm with either of you because I'm actually picking Shakarova to win the fight.
Oh, boy.
Not just as a desperation. I think, look, from what I've seen on tape, I think she's a pretty decent pressure boxer. I mean, she doesn't do a whole lot. She's not very high volume, but she's got a good jab. She works the body. And I think she's probably a little more athletic than somebody like Lauren Murphy. I think her hand speed is going to be a little better. If she does try to wrestle again, that's something else. That could be a problem. But
that's when game plan. That's when you pick a fight and the fight starts and they start doing something way different and you go, oh, Jesus, I lost my money.
Yeah.
I've,
yeah.
Before, I've made a bet and I posted on Twitter. I'm like, well, lost this bet. Like, we're 45 seconds in. It's like he's shooting for takedowns. I don't know what you want.
My favorite is always when the fight's going bad and somebody posts that they lost the bet before the fight ends. That's always my favorite.
It happens. You know sometimes.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, it's not like we haven't seen Shakarova on the ground. She looks pretty good there. I don't know exactly what her bottom game looks like, I have to admit. So we would see something there that is kind of the great unknown if that happens. But yeah, I maybe it's just my profound underwhelming feeling about Lauren Murphy. But I don't know. I see like this pressure boxer with fast hands, and I think, okay, I mean, she could maybe do this. And to your point, Sean, I don't think Murphy hits the salary anyway. So there is a little bit of that, you know, why not maybe to ease into the pick. But I also like Shakarova a little bit. I think people are not giving too much mind to her skills. And I think she's really building a pretty decent boxing game. So I'm going to go for the upset and see where that takes me.
All right, moving on. Two newcomers now. Philip Hall has 9,100, taking on Jacob Malkoon at 7,100. Hall's the big favorite, minus 240. Come back on Malkoon, plus 200. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 225. So his target is in GPPs. My quick breakdown is I like Hall's, but this is a pretty low-level fight where just if anything happens, it's not going to surprise me. We've seen Hawes fold before. He should be able to take that Malkoon and beat the tar out of him, but if he gets caught coming in, like, I'm going to have some Malkoon. And early in the week, I wasn't. I was all about Hawes. And now I'm thinking I got to stick to my normal philosophy of low-level fights. Crazy shit happens. So I'm picking Hawes, but I'm playing some Malkoon as well. Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this fight a little bit before we came on the air, and I think we all basically came to the same conclusion, which is that we like Hawes, but we think Malkoon is kind of live. Personally, I like Malkoon's boxing. I think that it's pretty nice. He's got a good right hand, a good straight right. He can wrestle a little bit too, although I doubt he'll try to do that here. But if he did, you know, we saw Hawes get tired against Julian Marquez. So, man, he's a big, strong guy. Maybe tiring him out is the move. But ultimately, I just think the physicality in Hawes is going to be too much here. I think at a certain point, he takes him down, beats him up, and either finds a sub, rinse or repeat. I don't think he's going to have to rinse or repeat takedowns, round. I don't think he's going to have to get one more than one or two per round, because I think the physicality is going to be such that that he's going to be able to hold him down. But if Malkoon can make this scrambly and make Hawes work, then yeah, he can certainly gas him out. Or if he wants to try to offensively wrestle and surprise him, that can be a thing too. Hawes has power on the feet, but as far as technical skills go, I'd probably give it to Hawes. So yeah, I think Hawes is plenty, or rather, I think Malkoon is plenty live here. I just can't bring myself to pick it. But I will have both sides of this fight. But just to put a bow on it, the pick is Hawes.
Joe.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every big spot that Hawes has performed in outside of his last win on the Contender Series, he's failed at. I mean, super athletic, elite wrestler, you know, has claimed to have taken rounds from John Jones, interesting fighter. Against this 4-0 guy who fought on the Australian regional scenes, who is Robert Whittaker's sparring partner. So if he was ever going to win a fight, this is the fight for him to win. So I guess I'll take Hawes, but I do have reservations about it, you know, based on how every big spot he's sort of failed in. So give me Hawes.
All right, moving on. We have Alexander Volkov, 8,600, taking on the big ticket, Walteris, at 7,600. Line on this fight, Volkov minus 170, Harris plus 160. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 175. I think that's all that is pretty much dead on. I think it's Harris early. The fight gets past the first few minutes. I think Volkov takes over, and it's a matter of whether or not he gets a finish. I prefer Volkov. I don't think he'll get the quick finish. Harris, that is, but he's live to it. That's my quick breakdown on that one. A decent fight in GPP to target both sides of. But again, I have the Russian. Joe?
Yeah, I guess I'll take Volkov as well. I mean, you know, there's been some narrative around, you know, Volkov came in 10 pounds heavier than his last fight, and Harris came in 10 pounds lighter. I'm not sure what that means. Harris has typically been a one round or bust type of fighter. You know, he's definitely got a puncher's chance, maybe even more so than Kudalaba here. But I think Volkov is smart enough to, you know, maybe put a takedown on him or two and get out of the first round and then just wear him out like Reem did. So give me Volkov here, but I do think Harris should probably be in a few lineups GPP.
Chris.
Yeah, I think Volkov is just too experienced and good as a striker. I think that he can walk Harris onto things, and Harris is just so low output, and he's just gonna give Volkov the space to do what he wants to do. Obviously, everybody flashes back to the big right hand that Derek Lewis landed on him. That was in at the end of a fight where Volkov was very tired. I don't think that's likely to happen here, although it always could. I think generally he has better defense in that, where he just sort of gave a half-hearted knee shield and nothing happened, and the punch just got through. But I just think that, generally Volkov's defense is pretty good. He's an educated striker. He's going to have that same head kick that Ream landed that rocked Walt Harris before the end of the fight. And as Joe said, live to a knockout, but too low output and too easily outworked and KO or bust. And I think the KO is pretty unlikely here. So I'm going with Volkov, and I think he can find the finish here.
All right, moving on. Co-main event time. Jared Cannonier, the favorite over the former middleweight champion of the world, Robert Bobby Knuckles Whitaker, at 8,000. Cannonier, the line right now is minus 110 for Cannonier. The comeback on Whitaker plus 100. You could go pick him in some other books. Kind of depends on your book. Fight does not go to decision, minus 140. It's really Cannonier power versus Whitaker. I think we all understand is probably better technically. And all the damage Whitaker has taken over the years. My interesting take for this one, I'll sum it up real quick, is I think Whitaker is my pick to win, but Cannonier makes for the better DK play all around. Chris, what do you got?
Well, Cannonier is my pick to win, and the reason is because I actually think Robert Whitaker has regressed significantly since that second Yoel Romero fight. I went back and looked to make sure I wasn't crazy, but Robert Whitaker did not do this thing where he just dives in from long range with huge hooks that fall 2 inches short. He never used to do that before. If you go back to the second Yoel Romero fight, he works behind the jab a lot. He looks for those head kicks, and there are a couple of head kicks attempts in the Darren Till fight. Now you could say that those two guys, Darren Till and Israel Adesanya, have sort of weird frames, and maybe he was looking for a way in, and that could be. But I just think that his technique is breaking down, and if he's gonna just leap into range with hooks like that, Cannonier is way too good of a counter striker, way too good of a boxer in general. We saw him hit the big counter against David Branch to end that fight. And Cannonier is just not a guy you can mess around with on the feet. For the amount of time that the Glover Teixeira fight was standing, Cannonier was getting off on him, even though that fight didn't last too long on the feet because Teixeira knew that. But Cannonier's dangerous, man. His hands are dangerous. And I think that if Whitaker has lost a step, as I think that he has, I think this could get dangerous for him too. I still love Whitaker's agility and power in there and the way he can bounce around and set up strikes. But I just – what I've seen from him lately, I just can't trust it against a guy who's as technical and accurate and powerful as Cannonier. So I'm going Cannonier.
Joe.
Yeah, Chris, I see your points. I mean, I've been really waffling on this fight all week. When I saw Whitaker at 8K, I'm like, oh my God, I got to go all in on Whitaker. I mean, when do we see Whitaker at 8K? And I've been kind of coming around a bit on Cannonier, and then I went back to Whitaker. Bottom line is I'm going to pick Whitaker. I think Whitaker is the better, you know, all-rounded fighter. I think he would be smart to use his wrestling here. We've seen that Cannonier can be dominated by wrestlers. So I'd like to see Whitaker, who was, you know, again, was an all Commonwealth wrestler and kind of held his own against Yoel Romero. You know, the damage narrative is there. I get it. But he has taken some time off. He hasn't really been an uber active fighter here either. You know, yeah, look, I know all Cannonier's the new buzz fighter at 185, but I still think Whitaker has got a few more fights in him. He's not that old. You know, he looked pretty good at weigh-ins. He looked serious. You know, he said that he had a really good camp. I'm going to take Whitaker here.
All right, moving on. It's main event time, guys. Khabib Nurmagomedov, 9,200, taking on Justin Gaethje at 7,000. Nurmagomedov minus 280, Gaethje plus 255. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 240. Look, I'm on Khabib. Is Gaethje live? Yes. If he can stop a takedown, but like Khabib says, maybe he stops the first, second. But I just don't see a way Gaethje gets enough space to implement his plan over five rounds or to land a knockout here. I mean, maybe he could flash KO Khabib, but I just don't see it. I have Khabib here. stack it up in cash games. I do think you'll get some value out of both sides. And I'm pretty much all in this fight. There's going to be volume, takedown attempts. Love this fight. Can't wait for it. Give me Khabib. Joe, what you got?
Interestingly enough, Sean, I don't think this is a good stack in cash because of the floor of, like, let's say Gaethje. Let's assume you're on Khabib and you think Gaethje. I think this is a good stack. This could be a stack in cash in case Gaethje actually wins. Honestly, I don't think his floor is going to be that high if he's wrestle-effed by Khabib here. So I look at the stack, and again, I haven't decided whether I'm stacking. I'm leaning towards not stacking simply because I don't think, you know, Gaethje has that solid a floor, and I really am kind of high on Khabib to win. But like stacking, because stacking is a hedge in cash, you know, in case you do get that win by Gaethje. I think obviously Khabib's got a much higher floor and a loss.
Kind of how I didn't stack Aldana Holm, and Holm won and burnt my tits off that day. That was so bad.
Right. Yeah, that could happen. You're right. So again, I like Khabib. I was a little concerned about weigh-ins. He did not look all that good. He had to weigh in at 155. You don't get that 1 pound. Needed the towel, needed help. He's throughout his career has had issues making weight. So I don't know that I'm going to read anything more into that other than the fact that he has historically had bad weight cuts. He's had fights canceled because he couldn't make weight. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. If you want to do a little MMA math, which we none of us like to do, Poirier beat Gaethje. Khabib just dominated Poirier. I think Gaethje looked incredible against Tony Ferguson in a fight that was striking, a striking-based fight. You know, now you're adding in the element of wrestling. I like Khabib here a fair amount. I certainly would not dissuade anyone from, you know, playing Gaethje or putting Gaethje in lineups and GPPs. I don't know how solid his floor is in cash. I certainly wouldn't go naked Gaethje in cash. I think there are better plays. But I'll take Khabib here.
Chris?
Yeah, there's like a big lingering question at this fight, and it's how is Gaethje going to react to somebody who persistently tries to wrestle him? Throughout his career, we've seen like one takedown attempt, and then he rolls through it and gets back to his feet, and then they go back to striking. We've never seen somebody with a coordinated takedown attempts and really try to work the game over and over and over again. So that'll be something to watch. I don't know the answer to that. But what I would say is we know that Khabib struggles with takedowns in space. Connor was defending them like nothing in that second round. It's happened his whole career. He needs to get you back to the fence to work his game. And I just don't know if he can do it against a fighter that's all pressure like Justin Gaethje. I don't know if he can win that pressure game. It would be impressive to me if he could. And Khabib is an impressive fighter, so definitely could happen. But I just see this fight playing out way too much on the feet to give Khabib a win here. Yes, I am picking Justin Gaethje. I think that the takedowns are going to be
craziness.
I think that look, if this is one of those fights again, we'll know if I'm wrong in the first 20-30 seconds, because maybe not. I mean, maybe the persistency will be the ones to get it. But what I mean to say is that if Khabib shoots for a takedown and is able to immediately attach himself to Gaethje in a way that others couldn't, then, yeah, I'm probably, out on an island somewhere myself. But I don't think that happens here. I think that the first round takedowns are actually going to be the hardest for Khabib, because that's when Gaethje is going to be at his most explosive and able to roll through those takedowns. And again, I just think that the pressure game of Khabib is going to be too much, and Khabib is not going to be able to get the pressure as he did against Edson Barboza, where he was literally trying to run at him. I just don't think you corner Gaethje like that. I think his footwork is too good. So I am going to say this is going to be a stand-up battle, and I can't give that kind of fight to Khabib. So I am absolutely forced with a heavy heart
to
pick,
enjoy it.
To pick, I love being the contrarian, it's true. But But I am picking Justin Gaethje here. And I guess if I'm picking Gaethje to win a fight, I have to pick it by knockout, huh? So that's how it's going.
Like it. You know, we have a couple of seconds. I want to reference the weight issue, the scale issue today. Habib Nurmagomedov weighed in at 155. If you want to talk about people missing weight and what that does to whoever, Habib Nurmagomedov, in my eyes, missed weight. And he owes Justin Gaethje 20% of his purse, which is no, like, in the prelims, that's all right. I mean, it really sucks for those guys because they're hamstring on a budget, but it's you know, $2,000, possibly $4,000. In this case, that is like, I don't even know what Habib's making guaranteed.
He's making a lot. He's making close to $1 million.
Yeah, a ton. 20% so it's of that's pretty it's, good. You know, there's no small feat there. It's pretty good, and he kind of got screwed out of it, and he still would have been a title shot for him should Habib not have made weight. In my mind, Habib missed weight, was so relieved. It's now all that aside, is that going to stop? You know, if he had a hard cut, is he going to gas out early? We've never seen Habib gas. It's just something, another thing to throw out there. Could the weight cut make him slow down? I don't think so. I still am on Habib. And just, I want to put it out there. He missed weight. In my eyes, he missed weight, period. End of story.
Sean, his last disclosed pay was against McGregor, where he had a $2 million base.
Woo,
against McGregor. Now, I don't know if that was because it was McGregor, but it
could be because of McGregor.
But, you know, I mean, I think it's right up there. I mean, you know, at Poirier, he obviously got a performance of the night, which he didn't need.
$400,000 out of Gaethje's pocket. $400,000.
So when they do the 20%, is that all in or is it just the base pay?
No, it's 20% of your show money.
Okay, all right. Because
and if you miss weight, you're not eligible for a performance bonus, which again is not going to mean anything to a guy like Habib. And you know, the thing is though, it's interesting because I don't know in all jurisdictions if the opponent actually gets all of that money. I think in some cases, some of it goes to like the commission. I mean, the rules are kind of gray. I don't know if he actually gets all of it. Maybe he does.
All right. That's it for the fight breakdown. Let's do hot takes, guys. In chat, give me some hot takes. Pump them in there. Nothing too crazy. I'll read. I mean, yeah, whatever. Go.
I have one queued up.
Don't stifle our audience.
Come I want to stifle them because I'm going to see some crazy, crazy stuff. Like, by Tuivasa wins by Peruvian necktie.
Yeah.
Like
that was going to be mine.
Yeah. All right, Joe. Start us off.
Okay. So I got a 15-1 parlay. And I should warn everybody that I have been ice cold betting. I've come up like a fighter short.
When I get to Jersey, I'm going to tail this one. I don't care what it is. I'm going
to
tail it.
Okay, so you should tail this because it's a 15-1 payout, and it does kind of make sense when you think about it. Okay, so it's Ankalaev wins by any finish. Okay, it's Jung wins by any finish. It's Habib wins by any finish.
Oh, my goodness.
It's Dawes wins by any finish, and Volkov-Harris does not go the distance.
Yeah, that – I don't know.
And that pays 15-1. Why? Well, which of those bets don't you like?
The one that's right in there was Hawes by finish. I think
if Hawes wins, he's going to win by finish.
I don't know. Robert Whittaker training partner is going to be tough. Going to be a tough.
I think if he wins, he wins by finish. So that is a 15-1 payout right there. I like it. I think it's got a legitimate shot to win. I mean, look, you could swap out if you don't like Habib. You could swap out Habib for Maverick. Maverick is -115. Sure. Habib is -121. You could put in Maverick, who I also think has a good chance to win by finish, but it's women's MMA and it's her debut, so.
All right, well, I just poo-pooed it, so that means it's going to come in, so everybody should bet it.
Yeah, I'm kind of some connection issues here, so
we can still hear you. I'll just or can we? No, we can't now. Okay, he dropped.
I just reconnected. Hopefully that worked.
Yeah, no,
Jesus.
You're good.
Before I duck out again, I was a little dicey on Hawes too, but I get if he wins, it's probably probably via finish. And you hit on my hot take. Miranda Maverick is going to score the most points on this card.
Wow, I love it. Right. I love it.
Yeah, that's good.
That is my hot take.
I love it.
And I suppose, I want to say Shakarova by finish, but that's not going to happen. No. I'm just going to say Gaethje by the finish there.
All right, let's get some hot takes in here. I like TJ's no Khabib in the winning GPP. Ryan's on your side. Gaethje KO, Struve sub. Gaethje by decision plus 1200 from the Voga man.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one.
That's interesting. All right, guys, that's it for the breakdown. That's it for the hot takes. Thank you to RotoWire. Last one. Khabib will win by TKO.
Inshallah.
Inshallah.
That's it for the podcast, guys. Make sure to go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to their website. Premium content, no credit card required. Subscribe to the podcast, RotoWire on YouTube, RotoWire MMA on iTunes. That's it for this episode. Good luck in your contest. We will see you next month for the next pay-per-view.
Thanks, guys.